I'm Jill Anderson. This is the Harvard EdCast. Harvard lecturer Todd Rose thinks the road to success in the future will look different than what most of us know. The idea that there is a tried and true path to success and that success is defined by wealth and power is changing, he says. Through Rose's long-term study, the Dark Horse Project, he's exploring how men and women achieve success by harnessing their individuality. What he's finding is that success has a lot more to do with personal fulfillment and happiness than we ever thought before, and that individuality matters. This is evident in what he calls dark horses, or those people who reach success in unconventional ways. We talked about what this shift means for education, and why personalized learning will become even more important in figuring out your path towards success in the future. But I asked Todd, who surveyed thousands of people about the meaning of success, why he was so surprised to see fulfillment as a driving factor. You admit that this was a surprise.
Yeah. So when we started this project, right, it was kind of a passion project. I just was interested in, like, there's all these people who are successful that no one sees coming. And maybe there's something we can learn from them. Because I think as a society, we tend to just see, oh, how good for you. That was really interesting. And then just walk away because it seems like a one-off. And I thought going in that the thing they would have in common is like their personality. I assumed if you would be willing to buck the system, that you must have kind of like a Steve Jobs, Richard Branson kind of like. And it didn't take very long to figure out that just wasn't true. It was probably only like 20 interviews in where you realize their personalities are all over the place. We had originally been looking at how it is they got better at things. Were there some secrets to like training and things like that? And all they wanted to talk about was like how they'd figured out what matters most to them. Some people like literally said fulfillment was the thing that mattered most. People use words like meaning and purpose. And it just kept showing up. And honestly, I was like, oh, I don't really want that to be true because it seems really soft. But it kept coming up. And so we thought, okay, well, if this is how they're viewing how they achieved what they achieved, like maybe there's something to this. And let's dig in and understand like what made this actionable, right? Versus something like fall your bliss off a cliff.
One of the things you talk about in the book is how this looks different for everybody. Goes back to what you've been spending your whole career kind of looking at is there is no such thing as average. There is no status quo. How would you take something that can't really be defined broadly and apply that sort of in a more broad way?
Yeah, sure. It's certainly the case, right? So fulfillment and success that way is very personal, right? Because it's about achieving things that matter to you. Mm-hmm. So the things that matter to you that give you meaning are not going to be the same as they are for me. And that's okay. You're right. It's part of the broader work I do around the science of individuality. What's interesting about it is sometimes it feels like if something is so individual or personal, it must be sort of chaotic. And how would you scale that? But in fact, all that really changes is that you can't sort of dictate it, right? That's all that changes. If we have a standardized view of success, we can sort of organize all of society. Say, everyone walk this way, do these things, be the same as everyone else, only better. You can't do that. What it shifts toward is that our role as a society and our institutions is more about helping you understand who you are and what matters most and equipping you with the skills and knowledge you need to be able to put that into play in the world.
We're so focused on achievement, benchmarking.
Yeah.
Why are we so focused on achievement and not fulfillment?
Well, it probably gets back to this idea of we're used to things that feel nice and tidy, right? Where we can measure it cleanly in what we'd quote unquote objective way, right? I would say one big reason is largely around equity and fairness, right? So if we narrow our view of success to like some test scores or grades and say in high school, it's largely like, do we get you into a four-year college? At least we have a way to know whether we're doing right by all kids. When it becomes about personal fulfillment, it gets a little harder. Is Susie a mechanic because that's really what her path is in life, or because we failed to give her more options, right? Look, this is where society's going, and I think this is where we have to go in education, and I think that educators are ready for it, and the system just hasn't been designed for it yet.
So I guess the question would be, how do we change this? How do we move past this model that we have, especially when there might be some people who think they're all about the data, they're all about getting kids to college. We've lived that narrative for a really long time.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not opposed to any of that, right? I'm not opposed to every child going to college. I'm not opposed to rigorous accountability based on data. For me, it's just what data are we using. So in terms of the public education system, I think it's pretty clear that where it has to go is somewhere that it's already being positioned to go toward, which is more personalization. Right. And I get that that word has a lot of ambiguity and a lot of meaning, different things for different people. By that, I mean a system that is built to be responsive to the individuality of each and every kid. It doesn't mean everyone's a snowflake. It doesn't mean let kids do whatever they want. But it does mean that we no longer get to just process kids and ranking them, right? Mm-hmm. We have an obligation to understand and cultivate them.
And you've pointed out a lot about how personalization is everywhere.
Literally, it's in every public system that touches human beings. This is the move. So in medicine, there's no question that's where it's going. Now the question is, how do you restructure the system to deliver that for everybody? But the fact that now we've gotten beyond average-based medicine and we realize actually your individuality matters. And when we take that seriously, we can build systems, we can do research, we better understand mm-hmm. what's wrong and how to treat you. We see this in nutrition, we see this in commerce, we see this in sports. In many ways, education is sort of the last place. It's like really, really hesitant to want to move. And my argument is that it's going to move whether we like it or not. The real question is, do educators get to have a say in where it goes?
Yeah.
Or do we just get left behind and end up having to play catch up?
Why do you think it is that it's so difficult to personalize education for students, whereas we're doing it in all these other places? What's happening in education that makes it so hard?
It's not surprising that the first places that move toward this are places that have functioning markets, mm-hmm. right? Consumers want something. They know what they want. Suppliers have the ability to actually deliver that, and there's competition there. I think there are reasons why education may struggle to be a functioning market. So I'm mm-hmm. not saying just let it be a free-for-all.
Right.
But I think it's probably why education is one of the last to move. It's a pretty entrenched bureaucracy. It's a pretty closed system. It doesn't mean it can't move, mm-hmm. but it's not surprising it's one of the last.
I try to imagine what my own experience would have been like in school if that was part of the system, which it wasn't. And I think it's even hard for parents, I would guess. Parents out there have this model of how you are supposed to go to college and mm-hmm. get a job, and that model just is out there. So why do you think we're so afraid, parents, educators, of going down this path of delving into what motivates children?
So we have a system. We agreed, right? Like, trade in some of your individuality. There's like a standard path. At the end of that is more security, more reward for people who do well. And we've all been trained that way. So it's hard to imagine something different. The truth is, for a lot of parents, just jumping wholesale into this, like, wait a minute, the future is about personal fulfillment in a more personalized world. I think a lot of parents really want that. They would love nothing more than to equip their kids to be happy and successful, right? So if suddenly you decide your child isn't going to play by the same rules and they're not going to follow the same things and take the same tests and do those things, there may be a disadvantage to that, mm-hmm. right? So I think what most parents who are navigating this well have done is realize that right now, maybe there is a bit where you have to play by the same rules. Like, I don't really recommend someone ruling out college, you know, just because. That doesn't make any sense to me. But there is a sort of mindset that you can cultivate in your home, mm-hmm. right? The sort of way that you carry yourself, the way that you show your kids what's important in life and help them develop the habit of knowing what matters most to them. I think that's by far the most important thing you can do. And I think it will position them to be not only successful in the system that exists, but be prepared for the one that's coming.
So can you give me some maybe examples of what that might look like as a parent modeling this type of behavior? Because they may not necessarily be able to access it inside schools with how things are structured
right now. Yeah, most likely not, right? My advice for parents usually depends on if you have younger kids or older kids. So let me start with younger kids. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's really simple. What we found in the Dark Horse Project is the first step toward being on a path of fulfillment is this idea of knowing what truly motivates you. What we found was that motivation looks very, very, very personal when you dig into it.
Right.
And that dark horses were amazing at knowing this sort of mosaic of things that motivate them. And some things were more general, but some things were really, really specific. So as a parent, starting to think about helping your kid think about what it is that they enjoy doing mm-hmm. and why. And then the why is everything.
Right.
First of all, we rarely do this with kids. I mean, we might say, how was your day? How was school? How was soccer? But what's important is when there's something that they find interesting, helping them just do the one level down, like why, right? So if they really enjoy football, is it being outdoors? Is it being with their friends? Is it the competition? That gets closer to the things that are motivating to them. And the reason that's important is that football wouldn't be the only thing that combines some of those. Mm-hmm. So as you start to ask those questions of yourself, it doesn't take very long before you start to realize there's a handful of things that really matter to you.
Right.
And that gives you so much more power to be able to pick situations that will also be very motivating.
And then does that shift as kids get older? Like, do you find that this motivators are innate? Like, is it something you're just born with or
no, I mean,
does
some
it
of,
shift?
Some of them, I'm sure, could
yeah.
be. I personally don't care.
Ah.
I don't care if your motives are innate or acquired.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, if they are propelling behavior, you need to understand them,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they will affect the decisions you make. And so many people don't realize, like, I thought I was making a good choice and it doesn't turn out well. And you don't really know why. And you're not happy where you are. But if you don't figure this out, you'll just make another choice that's, you know, you're not that happy either. So I think that what happens as kids get older is their world widens,
mm-hmm.
right? And they get more exposure to things. So it tends to get more nuanced, the stuff that matters. For me, though, the thing that changes as kids get into, say, high school and then into college, I'm assuming they have the habit of understanding what motivates them and making choices. What I want to know, and this is where parents get really freaked out, right? Is my kid on a path of fulfillment or are they just being a flake? How do you know? So here's the thing. Here's the good news. It's actually really, really easy to know. It really comes down to personal responsibility. It was really interesting in the Dark Horse Project. Like, Dark Horses never shirk responsibility. They don't freeload. They are willing to sacrifice for their version of fulfillment. So when I see parents that come to me and say, oh, my kid, you know, they want to be an actor and, you know,
right,
whatever.
Right.
If they're in L.A. and they're living with seven roommates and they're working two jobs, sometimes we get nervous about that. But for me, that's great. That's a sign of responsibility. That's a sign that, like, either they're going to learn something valuable or this is their path. If they're like, yes, I want to be an actor, but I expect you to pay for everything, that's not a good sign at all. That's where I get really worried, because the truth is, the list of things that I would do if somebody was paying for it is pretty long, right?
Right.
But it shrinks pretty quickly if I have to sacrifice. So from cultivating kids' sense of what matters to them to ensuring that they are actually taking responsibility for their choices, I think that package helps parents know, how do I support kids and how do I know that they're actually on a path that's productive versus one where I need to pull them back.
Right, because I would just guess that there could be that tendency when a child gets older, is a teenager, and they're looking toward what they're going to do after high school. That might be a time when parents can really...
Yeah, they have a big influence.
Right.
Like a really big influence. And I will say, too, one of the things that I think is really unfortunate about the way high school has gone now to this point where we've become largely about getting kids into college.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this with my own kids, who I have one that's graduated from college and one that's still in college, is having them try to take courses to discover, to just say, look, maybe I'm going to be interested in French literature, but maybe not. But it's okay. I mean, how will you know until mm-hmm. you try, right? To suddenly saying, oh, I can't take a chance on that because if I don't do well, it's going to affect my college application. I don't like that corrupting influence. I think that it's really important as you get into high school that parents are helping to support kids, saying it's important to have breadth. It's important to try things, right? Because, you know, Charles Eliot, the former president of Harvard, as he pushed to make Harvard all elective, like, he thought it was crazy that we kept restricting what kids could do. He thought high school should be this place of discovery, that
right.
there should be more options than any kid could take, that it largely should be pass-fail, and that what we want is, best case is, kids come out knowing what they love. But he said a really close second was figuring out what you hate. Like, both of those things are really important. So I think we've lost that sense of the purpose and discovery of figuring out who you are and, like, how those motives fit into the world, which I think is by sampling. We have the most diverse economy in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the number of things that you could actually do for a living is pretty breathtaking. The fact that even those jobs keep changing and will keep changing, so it's hard to even know what it means to prepare kids for their future. I think this sense of understanding why you're making the choices you're making, even if a kid does the straight and narrow all the way through college, all the way into a job, and it looks very typical, what I'm going to be looking for is, do they know why they're making that choice? If you're going to college just because it's the next step, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, and I think that we're seeing other people starting to believe that too, in the sense that many colleges are supporting gap years. because kids show up way more mature. But why are they more mature, right? Because they go and work or they go and serve and they get a better sense of who they are. So I think the big thing is knowing why you're making the choices, and that better tie back to who you are. And if that leads you to college, great. And if it doesn't, that's fine.
So when you think about the future of education, can you share with me some ideas of how you hope, maybe imagine classrooms might look that would support kids in this journey toward fulfillment,
sure.
really?
So the good news is that the components of education that help equip kids to live a fulfilling life are actually very, very similar to those things that we need to help you be able to thrive in an uncertain economy.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I mean when I think of something that's more personalized. I certainly don't mean putting kids in front of a piece of technology, right, with an algorithm that's adapting to them. And that's because that's where you can sell stuff, right? You
mm-hmm.
can make money if I do that. I think of it being just a handful of things, right? The ability to design more flexible environments, which seems obvious, but we're still the only industry that encourages design based on average, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when someone comes in with all their individuality, let's say for whatever reason, they're two grades behind in reading. Well, now they're going to struggle in chemistry or they're going to struggle whatever, because it's always like a reading test, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be true. So we have things like universal design for learning,
right.
which is a way to make sure the things we're designing are actually flexible for everyone. Then there's two other things I think are just vital. One is this idea of mastery learning. It's unbelievable that we still live in a time when our education system has fixed time and then we give kids grades. And as long as you don't fail, we move you on, right? But we've known for 50 years that the single best predictor of how well you'll achieve in any one class is how much background knowledge you have coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid that gets an A minus and a kid that gets a C minus are just worlds different. And then you just see this as you move through the system, it just propagates error and achievement differences grow and grow and grow. So we have a whole approach of mastery-based learning, which was developed by Benjamin Bloom in the 80s, which is probably the most widely accepted part of personalization right now. There are whole states that are jumping into it, school districts, you know, everything from Khan Academy with technology to the state of Idaho. So that's just allowing kids to have a little more flexibility in their pace, but importantly, giving them the right kind of feedback and the right kind of correctives to do next. And the idea is like, we're expecting all kids to get to mastery, even if it takes them a little longer. So if you add mastery to flexible design, the third and I think really important and sometimes challenging piece is more student autonomy. So not like Lord of the Flies, kids get to just take over,
yeah.
right? I still want teachers in charge. I think that's really important. But if we want kids coming out as self-directed adults who understand how to make choices, how to learn from mistakes, what better place to learn that than in a scaffolded environment in education? So it just means giving kids more choice, more voice in the things that are going on. When we see this implemented well, it can range from the extreme, like democratic schools, which are very interesting, where kids actually have a say in everything from like the rules of the school and disciplinary procedures to the things that are taught. That's a pretty extreme case, but they're very interesting because they do work.
I bet.
To basic things like the ability to have a say in the topic that I'm pursuing. We do this at Harvard all the time. I can't remember the last time I told students what it is that they had to do for a project. Of course, they're going to pick the thing that matters and they're going to demonstrate their knowledge through that. We know why, because it's just much better when they do that. So the ability to think about both having choice in the system, but that sort of self-knowledge and self-regulation skills that kids need to take advantage of that choice, I think is the third and really essential piece.
So you had mentioned for parents like to ask, find out why, help a child discover the whys of what they're interested in. What about teachers? Is it the same or is it just the choice factor that you just mentioned?
Look, I would always say, given that like the idea of knowing who you are and what matters to you is pretty fundamental. It's not a guarantee of fulfillment, but without it, we didn't see anybody who was able to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
All hands on deck on that, right? But I do think teachers have another role, which is really, really interesting. One of the really essential things that we found about Dark Horses is so they know who they are, they know what matters, they know how to make choices off of that. But okay, but then inevitably it means getting better at things. Fulfillment requires achieving things. It's not
mm-hmm.
complacency. And what was so fascinating is that, you know, in our normal world, we think of there's like one right way to do something. In fact, the idea of strategy isn't really a thing if you think about it, right? There's a way to do the math problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to climb the corporate ladder. What Dark Horses show is this is not true. This actually pulls back to the broader science I'm a part of. in the science of individuality, there's a term called equifinality, meaning that for any outcome, there is always more than one right way to get there. Always. It's a guarantee. Dark horses are so good at being able to say, okay, I want to accomplish X. Well, what's the best strategy for me to do that? The truth is their best strategy will be aligned to their individuality, their strengths and weaknesses, all those things. And what they do is they'll cycle through a bunch of strategies until they land on one that really fits them. And during that time, they can look really inefficient. Wait a minute, what are you doing? You just like look like you're just kind of fumbling around. It's like, nope, they're trying things and click, and then they just are amazing, right? This idea of helping kids realize that achievement is as much about finding the right strategy as it is about brute force or innate talent. What's so interesting is someone like, say, Carol Dweck, right, who focuses on growth mindset. Mm-hmm. People often thought that just meant praising kids for the effort rather than ability. But actually, she was very clear that it's about praising them around the strategies, about like you're not just doing the same thing over and over again, right? You're adjusting, you're tweaking your strategy. So I think teachers can play this really important role in cultivating a sense of it's about finding the right strategy and actually helping to surface these things for kids.
Todd Rose is lecturer at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and director of the Mind-Brain Education Program. He is author of the book, Dark Horse, Achieving Success Through the Pursuit of Fulfillment. I'm Jill Anderson. This is the Harvard EdCast, produced by the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Thanks for listening.